All right, it's 6 o'clock, and you know I like to start on time, so we're going to go ahead and start. So let's go ahead and open with a word of prayer today, shall we? Father God, Lord, we praise you today. Lord, we thank you for this wonderful blessing, just gathering us together for fellowship, for worship in your word. Lord, for study. Lord, we pray that lead us into deeper understanding of all that you've provided for us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right. Well, today we are going to be in Genesis chapter 21 again. Now, if you remember last time, which was 2 weeks ago because we had vacation Bible school. Well, you remember, I know, you have to hang on to these thoughts. We were in 21, and we're going to be in the second part of this, chapter 21. So the first is starting in verse 14. And we're going to see two different stories happening. One is the Hagar and Ishmael story, which kind of flows out of the one we just finished 2 weeks ago. Abraham receives a divine command to give into Sarah's really evil intended to send off Ishmael, send him away. I won't have him. I won't have this one who's not my laughter bringing you laughter. I'm not going to. I remember that passage where he said that he saw Abraham was, Ishmael was bringing Abraham laughter, and Yesek is laughter, and will bring laughter. He said, I won't have it, and so he prays to God, and God commands us in a way. But after that, we're going to have another interaction with Abraham and Abimelech. My father is king, Abimelech. Now, remember, when's the last time we saw him? That's right. It was the second round of that's your sister. That's my sister. Well, I think she should be my wife. And that whole incident that happened there. So we're going to see another story with him in it. But first, let's go to Genesis chapter 21. And verse 14, we're going to read. I'm going to read 14 through 21, 14 through 21, and so it's 21, 14 through 21, and then we'll read through it, and then we'll go through it, okay? So, early in the morning, Abraham got up, took bread and water skin, and put them on Hagar's shoulders, and sent her and the boy away. She left wandering in wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she left the boy under one of the bushes and went and sat at a distance, about a bow shot away, for she said, I cannot bear to watch the boy die. While she sat at a distance, she wept loudly. Elohim heard the boy crying, and the angel, the messenger of God, called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, What's wrong, Hagar? Don't be afraid, for God has heard the boy crying from this place where he is. Get up, help the boy up, and grasp his hand. For I will make him a great nation. Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well. So she went and filled the water skin and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy and he grew and he settled in the wilderness and became an archer. He settled in the wilderness of Paran and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. All right. So, Abraham gets up early in the morning, time to leave, right? And he took the bread and the skin of the water and he gave them to Hagar and he put it, actually the Hebrew, like the version I have here, this is the Christian Standard Version, they kind of make a decision for you. And the Hebrew, it's actually, there's this famous ambiguity here. Putting the bread on your on her shoulders, because it makes more sense to us. But in the Hebrew, it's actually really ambiguous. What is he putting on the shoulders? It says, because he says, he took the bread and the skin of the water, and he gave it to Hagar, and he put upon the shoulders and the child. And that's how it reads in the Hebrew. And so it's really kind of unclear, okay, is he putting the water and the bread on her shoulders or the boy? In the Hebrew, it's, like I said, most English translations kind of make a decision for you. Back in chapter 17, we learn that Ishmael was about 13 years old. So putting a teenage boy on his mom's shoulders seems kind of ridiculous. But the ambiguity is intentional for something that's coming up later. So we just kind of tuck that away. That's why it's ambiguous. But this is a good example of how sometimes the interpreters of your translation have made decisions for you and how, you know, and how you should interpret this passage. And most times that's good. And sometimes you're like, well, I don't know if I disagree with you. And that's why you have differing translations that say some slightly different things, right? Like, maybe we should translate that a different way. And this group of people translate it this way, and this group of people translate it that way. And so it's a good example of things that they've made an interpretation for you here. It's probably the right one. I don't see Abraham picking up a 13-year-old and, hey, mom, carry this. But it is an interpretation there. But the ambiguity is actually, like I said, it's for later, so you got to tuck that away. So he sends her away, and so he went, and so she went, and she wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Is the word for well. And Shiva is the number 7, so the well of 7. This is actually a very famous place. But it's the well of 7, or sevenfold waters of a well. So it's, and we're going to see this place come up quite a bit in your Hebrew scriptures. It becomes a sacred place for Islam as well. But it's going to see, you're going to see this place a lot, quite a bit, a few places in the scriptures. More than I want to say, let's go look at some of the places. You know, I don't do it. It's quite a few places. And so the water finished from the skin, and the water ran dry. So not enough water in the wilderness. That's kind of a common theme in the wilderness, isn't it? There's not enough water in the desert. We're going to see some of that theme happening quite a bit. And so she cast the child and she threw him under one of the bushes. We'll come back to that idea too. And she went and she sat for herself some distance away. The boy, he's 13 years old. He probably passed out from the heat and no water and put him under a bush, let maybe the bush help protect him from the sun, but she's definitely running away because she doesn't want to see her son die. I mean, she does not want to see her son. So it says she goes some distance away, about as far as someone could shoot a bow is how far it is away. How far that is, I have no idea. But it's about as far as the distance you could shoot a bow. And we're not talking compounds here. So, although some of you guys are hunters, so, no bows, you know, we're talking not recurves. just a long bow, or maybe not even a long bow, maybe a short bow. But anyway, so about that far away, she goes, I can't see the death of my child. And she lifts up her voice and she wept. Yeah. So she's wrong. She goes out into the wilderness. She's certain that she's going to die there in the wilderness. We're repeating, if we're going to talk about the stories we've already repeating, right? Because we're seeing that repeated theme over and over and over again. We're thinking Cain and Abel, right? Remember Cain? I'm going to die out here. So we're thinking that kind of stuff. Whoever finds me is going to kill me for sure. But it also is a scene of Abel's blood. You know, Abel's blood rose to the place of God's. Well, God hears. God hears the motif. That's a motif that we're seeing here, that she sat away and she's wept loudly, and it's reaching, we're told in a minute here, that it's reaching the place where God dwells. That's the rising of the crying here. And so we're seeing that kind of repeated theme there. Which by now, we've gone through this so many times, I'm hoping you guys are starting to pick up, oh yeah, that sounds like this. A little different, but I'm picking up some of that theme there. Because we've been through it quite a few times now. And so she goes out, and she's certain this is a death sentence, and she cries, her voice, she weeps, and Elohim heard the voice of the boy. So we know mom's crying, but then apparently the boy is saying or doing something because the sound rises up to God. So the boy's not just passed out dead. If we go back to Genesis chapter 4, that's the Cain and Abel story, right? Whose voice? Okay, we know Cain is crying. You know, he's like, oh, I'm going to die here, all that stuff, right? But what does God hear in Genesis chapter 4? What brings him down? Well, it was the victim, right? Yeah, the blood of your brother is crying out to me. It's the victim. So it's the voice of the victim. So it's not focused on Hagar. We know she's crying out. But who's the real victim here? The child, who has nothing to do with all this. He was just born. He's out of all the people that are being hurt here. I mean, we know that she's was a slave, had no, you know, she was didn't have some choices. She tries to oppress Sarah. There's this rivalry that's happening. There's all this other stuff going on. So we know that she's somewhat of a victim. She's a victim, but that's not the focus on here. The focus is that the boy is the true victim here. He's innocent in this. He's just born. And he was just hanging out with his dad. And Sarah can't stand to see Abraham happy over this boy. So the victim's voice. Maybe victims if we throw Hagar in there. I think we can throw Hagar in there, especially because of what he says, what the Elohim calls from. The messenger of the Elohim calls to her, Hagar, from the skies and said to her, what's the matter, Hagar? What's the matter, immigrant? Remember, because that's what her name means. What concerns you? Listen, don't be afraid. Elohim has heard the voice of the boy right in the place where he is. And so there's a little ambiguity there. Is it talking about where God's at? Or is it where the boy is at? So the boy from crying for the boy crying, it says, "Don't be afraid. God has heard the boy crying from the place where he is. So who's the main focus? There's a little ambiguity there. We could say it was God. He heard him from heaven. That would kind of, from his throne, that would call him down. We've seen that motif in Genesis chapter 4, as well as we saw that in Genesis, when the Tower of Babel, and the flood narrative, right? And, you know, we've seen God come down. We also know that he's hearing the boy from where the boy is at. Where's he at? He's under the bush. Just sitting there in a bush. So there's ambiguity there. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're told that God has heard him, but it only talks about Hagar speaking, which is another interesting. That's interesting, isn't it? Well, remember, we're tying this back to the last time that he was thrown out, where the focus was Hagar, and the boy was a lot younger. That's why sometimes in our minds, when we read this passage, we want to make Ishmael a lot younger, because we're tying it to the last time this happened, where he was a lot younger. And that's, they do that on purpose. I know, that's not nice. What? No, just the boy. Just the boy. So get up and pick up the boy and take him with your hands. I'm going to make a nation, a great nation. And Elohim opened her eyes, and her eyes were opened. Well, last time we had eyes open, right? We had eyes opening back in Genesis 1 through 11. When were the eyes open, right? When was that? That's right, after they ate the fruit. We'll say fruit, not apple, because apple is a Greek idea. It just says fruit. It was a fruit. Actually, it comes from the idea it comes from an apple is because the golden apples and the apples, fruit of the gods and stuff like that's from Greek mythology. It just says fruit. But their eyes were opened. After they ate the fruit, their eyes were opened. And what did they see? They saw nakedness. then in Genesis chapter 4, which is the mirror vision of Genesis chapter 3, the victim who cries up rose to God, and she opened her eyes, and she saw not nakedness that leads to death, but now she sees life and water. So she sees a well of water. So you're having that kind of, like before it was, they opened their eyes, they saw nakedness and death, and now it's like, phew, God opened their eyes, and now you're seeing life and water. So you're seeing that twist on this theme that you're already, like we're used to seeing, when the eyes are open, then uh-oh. But now your eyes are open and you're seeing something positive. So yeah, kind of more like Paul. She fills up, so she sees the well of water. She went and she filled up the skin of the water because it, had run dry. And she gave drink to the young one. And from that day on, Elohim was with the young boy. He grew up big. I'm reading, translating more of a direct Hebrew. just like Yesek grew up big in the previous scene, now Ishmael grows up big living in the wilderness. So, and he became a shooter of the bow. So what we would call an archer, a hunter, shooter of the bow. And he dwells in the wilderness of Paran. And where's Paran? Back towards Egypt. Mm-hmm. So his mother take for him a wife from the land of Egypt. Yeah. In Genesis chapter 4, God has mercy on the murderer and gives him a sign of protection. And Cain has his own version of it and creates a city. But God has mercy on... But even even though the roles are reversed, the victim is now the one being thrown out into the desert. God chooses the same kind of mercy and provides water and protection in the wilderness. And water in the wilderness is kind of like an Eden motif, right? So the story is 4 and 3 and 2, all kind of in a backwards motion, moving from 4 to 3 to 2, if we're reading back in this decreation death wilderness motif here. They're all of those images are kind of whittled together in this God saving them out in the image. And we also have the flood in this quite a bit. The flood is in this. I don't know how many of you guys picked up on the flood in there. There's quite a bit of flood narratives. The bow, right? Became a shooter of the bow. When's the last time we saw a bow? Yeah, it was when God put down his warrior bow and placed it in the sky, and therefore we have the rainbow. That's the last time the bow appeared. Noah and his flood are Noah and his family are rescued from too much water, and then given sign of the bow. So Yishmael are rescued from not having any water, and the bow and multiply become synonymous. They're going to be a place of linking together, and so it becomes a sign that he's going to survive, and that he's going to become a great nation. And so we see, and there's quite a few. And of course, if you go to the app, yes, you can see this chart in more detail. And you go through all the different things. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't given it that much thought. I don't know. I don't know if there's really that much more significance to it, but there might be. And I have not thought about that. I'll have to say I haven't given me enough. So write a paper on that and get back to me. Yeah, the bow. Yeah, same word. Yeah, same word. Now, I will say that if you are doing some study, because some of you are like, ooh, I need to do some more study on this passage, you might come across the idea that, because it switches from Yahweh to Elohim here, messenger of God, that there is a different spirit other than Yahweh here. And several people claim this. This is a growing theory. You'll see this more and more because of things like the divine council point of view, where Elohim's spirit beings mean, because a lot of times we used to just say that Elohim meant God, right? And it does, but it also means any spirit being, right? You know, even dead people can be called Elohim when they brought, you know, remember that, remember we did a whole thing on that. Angels, Elohim, you know, any spirit being can be Elohim. Which Elohim? Which God? Well, there's the special one, Yahweh. He's the Elohim. And so as that's becoming more widely accepted, some people have started saying, well, which Elohim is saving Ishmael? And because Ishmael is claimed as the founder of the Islamic faith, some will see, some commentators will see, I'm not throwing this out there as this is what it is, because this is way not in the Bible. But some commentators will say that because Ishmael was the founder of Islam, that it was a different Elohim. It was Allah that claimed him. Which they would say is a... I don't hold to that personally, though I am intrigued by the idea. Why I have trouble with it is because Yahweh promised it in chapters before. It says Yahweh promised it earlier that he was going to make him a nation. And so there we're seeing that repeated idea here. So it's linking the two together. However, I suppose it is possible that Yahweh kept his promise to Hagar through another Elohim. He is God over all the Elohim. And then later, that Elohim uses Ishmael to establish himself as a god in the form of Allah. So I suppose that's possible. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I don't know if I hold to that. But there are several of the newer commentaries that I'm starting to see this trend question, which Elohim is here at this moment? And a lot of that, it's an interesting idea. It's definitely an interesting idea. Which one is there? Excuse me, I just hit the wrong button. But it has no biblical support other than the fact that it uses the word Elohim instead of Yahweh. So Elohim does seem to emphasize God's power and majesty, where Yahweh emphasizes his relationship and fruitfulness when you read the scriptures. So, and then on top of that, I don't see why it would have to be a different Elohim for Islam to adopt this story later on. Because I don't even know if it's a direct descendant of Ishmael that Muhammad comes from, right? There's no evidence that it is. They claim this story later on. So, but if you're going to go do more studies, which I always recommend you do, because studying is awesome. It sure is. So he's going to be made a great nation. And like I said, this gets claimed by Islam later on. And a lot of people say that it's from this point that we have the split, the war between Christianity and Islam comes from. Whether that's true or not, it is a claim. Biblically speaking, Islam doesn't exist until way after the Bible, so. Under Yahweh, no. But if there are other spirit beings, could they have claimed for themselves godhood and then taught another religion? It's possible. I don't know that that's true, but that's possible. I thought we already did a study on Islam in here. Didn't we do that one already? Oh, no, that was our Sunday school lesson. We did that. I don't know if now's the time to really do a full lesson on Islam. maybe we can another day, if you guys remind me to say, hey, I'd really like this. It would take us at least a couple of days to get through that, but we could do a abbreviated Islam study, I guess. Today is not that day. So maybe we'll take a break and do that another day. Allah is the word for God in Aramaic, Arabic. And Aramaic's the language Jesus would have spoke. Arabic. And it's, and they will, some people say that is because they both claim Abraham as their founder, that they'll say that it's the same God. But when you read the Quran, which I have twice now, they are not the same God. They're not the same God. The belief systems are, they are in conflict with each other. So, but anyways, but if you're doing study, you might come across this idea, especially in newer works. It's interesting. I don't know if it's necessary, but it's interesting. All right. Now, this story and the following story, which I'm hoping to get to. Yeah, we got time. Not today. We won't get to this. The next story. Well, we're going to get to the Abimelech story, but the one after in Genesis chapter 2, which is the binding of Yitzhak, the almost sacrifice of Yitzhak, or the narrative. This one and the Genesis chapter 2 are the narrative culmination of Abraham's many failed tests and the sin of Abraham and Sarah against Hagar that began in Genesis chapter 16. And it's created a conflict that boils over in chapter 21, and God allows them to expel Hagar, and her first son, their expulsion depicts analogies to the near loss of Yitzhak that will soon follow. It's as if God is requiring of Abraham the consequences of his failures, he and Sarah's failures. And this actually lists parallels between the stories of the losing of his first son and the near losing of his second son. So I do recommend you go into the app, go to the notes, and read and look at that chart in detail. It's an interesting, obviously I'm not going to go through all of it right now, otherwise we won't have time to go to the next section. But I do recommend you go through that. In both stories, God saved Abraham's son from death that was set in motion by God's own command. The first, expel Ishmael. The second is to offer Yitzhak in sacrifice. Both crises are resolved by God providing a solution, water, ram, at the last moment when the parents have surrendered to the inevitability of death. At each point, Abraham's experience in Genesis chapter 2 is a reversal of Hagar's experience with Ishmael. In both stories, God has one who allows or causes the loss of the son. In both stories, God intervenes at the moment of crisis. The angel of the Lord calls from the skies. From both, Abraham is forced to give up his sons. And provides for them along the way with items that will play a role in the reversal of death. Ishmael gets a skin bottle. That's going to be the reversal of his death, right? He's going to get water. Yitzhak is wood on his back. That's going to be a reversal of his because they're going to get the ram. And they're both in bushes. Like the boy is in a bush and the ram is in a bush. Well, that comes later, but yes, that's that's, you hang on to that one for later, but yes, that's definitely tied into it. But there's a parallel here that's happening between the boys. So you see civil rivalry between Sarah and Hagar. Ishmael and Yitzhak are rival brothers, like Cain and Abel. I do like I said, I do recommend you going through all that list. It's really quite interesting, all the different parallels between the two stories. Because a lot of times we put Ishmael, the loss of the first son, Ishmael, in this pile, and then we focus on Isaiah, on Yesek, right? Isaac. And we put that like over here, and like we raise it up like on a pedestal. We're not going to throw this one away. And then because he's the chosen one, right? And he is the chosen one. However, there's parallels that are supposed to be drawn. We can't throw this one away. This is an important scene. Even though they're separate from each other, both are appointed as carriers of future legacy, right? They're going to be a great nation. So there's this parallel there, and I do have to go on if we're going to get through this. But I do do recommend going through that. All right. Let's talk about Avraham and Avimelech. Avimelech is a title name. It means like prince. It literally means my father is king. Yeah. So you're going to see it come up quite a bit. In the scriptures, in different places. This is probably the same one as the one we met before. However, later on in the scriptures, it's not the same guy, right? Actually, there's other, like, in the line of David that are named Abimelech. It's my father's king. So it's kind of like naming your kid prince when he's the prince. All right, so Genesis chapter 21, verses 22 through 34. And it happened that at that time, Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his armies, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now swear to me here by God, that you will not dwell with me falsely, or my descendants, or my posterity. According to the kindness that I have done to you, you shall pledge to do with me and with the land where you have dwelt as an alien. We're not talking aliens in outer space. We're talking about immigrant. Just throwing that out there. You know, got to make sure. Then Abraham complained to Abimelech on account of the well of water that the servant of Abimelech had seized. So Abimelech said, I do not know who did this thing, neither did you tell me, nor have I heard of it except for today. And Abraham took sheep and cattle and gave them to Abimelech, and two of them made a covenant. And then Abraham set off seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these seven ewe lambs that you have set off by themselves? And he said, you shall take the seven ewe lambs from my hand as proof on behalf that I have dug this well. Therefore, that place is called Beersheba. We just saw that place, didn't we? Because there are two, because the two of them swore an oath, and they made a covenant at Beersheba, and Abimelech and Pichol, his army commander, stood and returned to the land of the Philistines, and he planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called the name of Yahweh, the everlasting God, and Abraham dwelt as an alien in the land of the Philistines many days. All right. So right about the same time, obviously after she's left, but right about the same time, there's a, this is the author's way of saying, I'm going to put a story that you're supposed to be comparing with the last story. So there's two stories that are being, you're right at the time, there's something else to think about that's happening right now, right then and there. So you're supposed to be thinking it's about the same time. So remember, Abimelech, King Abimelech, And Pickle came with him, and he said, it's interesting. This is kind of intense. The king shows up with his army captain. And you know they're not traveling alone, because kings and army captains don't travel alone. That's just not how that works. And they come to you, and that's kind of intense, right? This is supposed to be like, oh, wait, there's something serious going on here. But surprise, there's a twist, right? Elohim, he says, Elohim is with you, Abraham. In everything you're doing, Elohim seems to be with you. Would you mind doing me a favor? He asked him. How about you swear an oath to me in the name of Elohim, who is with you? I want to make sure you never deal falsely with me again. Remember, he did it already. Don't do this to me again. Or with my seed or descendants. In fact, let's make this deal according to the chesed, is the word there. Which is a word that means like loyalty or loyal love. Some Bible translations is kindness. It's a word we don't have an English translation for. We don't have an English translation, so you'll see it translated lots of different ways because we don't have an English word for this word. My personal favorite is loyal love. Right now, that's my personal favorite. But it's chesed. And he says, let's make a deal according to the chesed, which we often associate with God's love, but the chesed that I show you. The king's saying, I'm showing you the chesed, this loyal love, this loyalty. And how about you promise to always do that to me and with my land here that you're migrating within? And it's politics at its best, right? It's a good diplomatic speech. He alludes to things that happen. On one sense, he's a politician hedging his bets. on another thing, he does know for sure that what after happened in chapter 20, he doesn't want to mess with this Elohim. Or Abraham, who's a prophet. So the best thing for us is to make a covenant. Let's be buddies. You're the chosen one. You're the blessed one. And if you remember back, the last time that some Canaanites made a covenant with Abraham, they joined his Eden refuge on the hilltop, right? And then they were spared from the kings that flooded the area. Remember the 9 kings that came in? So now we have another Canaanite who sees Abraham as the righteous, well, blessed or chosen. Let's say blessed or chosen more than righteous at this point, and wants to make a covenant oath with him. And so they make a deal with each other, and but Abraham makes this, brings up this matter of dispute he has with my father's king. See, there's this well of water, and the servants of Abimelech have actually stolen the well, is what he says. So they make a pact with them, which makes them like brothers, and these two brothers don't like each other. I have every reason not to like each other. But they're trying to make peace, and one's chosen, one's not chosen. Wait, we've heard a story like this, haven't we? We've seen some of that stuff before. It's kind of mixed up, but it's the same kind of pattern. And so they come through, and Abraham says, let's solve this dispute. So instead of it driving them further apart, this dispute, let's solve it. And the king says, Abimelech says, what? I don't know anything about this. You didn't report it to me? I've never heard about it. I didn't order it. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and two of them cut a covenant. Very male, be like that covenant that God had with them before, you know, where they split the animals and you walk in between the two dead animals saying, let us never part if we do this. It very well might have been that kind of covenant. It sounds like it might be, but we're not told that it is. So, maybe. They make peace, and at this Beersheba, this swell of sevenfold. As we look at the stories we've already seen, there's two ways the family of God can relate to the people around them. One, they can take their chosenness for granted and use it to drive other people away. We've seen that happen. Or they can become a genuine blessing to the nations around them, which is what Abraham's calling. We as Christians, I don't want to preach, but we as Christians can act the same way, right? We can take our chosenness for granted and it drives people away. Or we can become a blessing to the nations around us. No more sermon. But they're resolved this through a covenant, and it's a blessing, and it's at the well of seven. He sets up seven female lambs. And they're going to take them from a hand on behalf to say that I dug this seven. And there's kind of a side there, right? Dear reader, right? This is why the place of the well of seven. Because the two of them swore an oath with the seven ewes. Yeah. I don't know if he's afraid. He's definitely curious. I think he was probably a politician waiting. What do you have over there? And Abraham's waiting for him to ask so he can say, hey, I want to give these to you as proof. I think there's more politics going on there. It sounds to me like politics. Okay, so let me give this to you as proof that this well is mine and I dug it. Yeah, because they stole it before. This is proof. I dug this well. Give it back to me. Like he's paying a price for it. He is in their country. But he dug the well, which is not a cheap thing. I know for us, you just, get a backhoe and, digging a well was a much more difficult thing before modern technology. It's kind of a cool story. In which we see the chosen, we can be like the chosen and the non-chosen can be just as righteous. And the line of the chosen must have, and the line of chosen doesn't have, must have some specific perfect that they're, and has nothing to do whether they're righteous or not, why they're chosen. It has something to do with the promise of the snake crusher. That it's something that it's going through. That's why they're chosen, because that promised line that's coming. Nothing to do with their righteousness. So it's a cool little story there. And we have this Beersheba. And I'm running out of time, aren't I? One more thing. Let's go back. Let's go after they made the covenant at Beersheba, the well of seven. Abimelech and Pichol, the commanders, Abraham plants a tree there. Remember that? A tamarisk tree. So you have planted a tree at the well of seven, and he called the name of Yahweh El Eternal, or the Eternal God. That's what, how it reads there. So you have this source of water that's blessed by God, and you have this tree. So we're recreating what kind of imagery here? This becomes a garden imagery here. So we're recreating a Garden Eden moment here with this. And we have like that moment where he was in the tent, right? And they were sitting by the tree. And so we're going to see this sentence, right? This last little sentence here kind of leaves us with kind of an Eden-like moment. Just for a second. And then we get to go on. But so that planting of that tree is an important moment. I'll tell you, one of the interesting study. Go study all the trees in the Bible. Oh, it's just absolutely fascinating. I did that one time. Just went through and looked at all the different trees in the Bible and what the image beats they were calling, like they're going back to the Garden Eden or forward to the cross. Well, the cross is actually pointing back towards the Garden Eden. And we have, because that's referred to as a tree, and we have the Isaiah numbers and the figs and all the different trees that are on there. So fascinating. We do not have time for that. but that is a very fascinating study. I do recommend it if you got time to go through and do that. All right. Any questions? Next time we meet, we will be at Abraham's ultimate test. That's all you guys are like, as soon as we mentioned Abraham, this is the one you were waiting for. You're like, Abraham, I know that story. We're finally getting to it. We've had to go quite through a lot to get here. And we have to go through all that. Otherwise, we won't really understand the story, because we're going to miss a lot if we, you know, well, you would have missed all the Ishmael connection, right? If we'd done all that. So we're finally getting to it. So that next time we meet, we're going to be at the Abraham's ultimate test. So that's where we're going to be. My son, will you take us off air? Aiden, take us off air and stop record, please.